We just filled out a questionnaire where the first question I asked was, what are you looking for in a wife? And I purposely left for much later another question, which was, what are you looking for in a mother for your children? Now, all too often as bachelors, we tend to think about what we need in a partner. What do I need for me? And very often we forget that the same partner is going to raise our kids, and it's super important that we think about what traits are important in her as a mother. And this is something that people will overlook when they think about their wife. They'll overlook it throughout the dating, and then they'll live with the repercussions throughout their life. So you have to think a little bit about that. Her looks are not going to affect your kids. What? It could be that if she's all uptight because she has to stay all skinny, that'll affect the kids. It could be that if she's very, that might be good for the kids.
Why?
Who said why? She might not be so uptight about things like that. It could be that, in certain respects, it's not so good for the kids. Okay. What are your responsibilities as a husband? I purposely did not include the question, what are your responsibilities as a parent? But now go back to that and see what you wrote, because part of your responsibilities as a husband is to be her partner as a parent. And you have to give that some thought too as you prepare for dating. I asked, where do you want to see yourself in 20 years? And I think that people very often don't think about that, where they want to see themselves in 20 years. And it's very important if you can write out for yourself where you want to see yourself in 20 years. It helps a person sometimes think of the bigger picture. And when dating, you have to remember you're dating someone for much more than 20 years. So you're going to be married to this person till death. When you think about where you want to be in 20 years, that's something which will affect the person you're dating. Sometimes people look for a partner that's right for the next 3 years and they don't think beyond that. You have to stop and think. Now, it's true, you don't know where you'll be in 20 years. You don't know what you'll be doing to make a living. But there are certain areas of life where I hope you do have some clear aspirations about where you want to be in 20 years. And then the next question, in 10 years, in 5 years, in 3 years, was more for your own personal growth, because very often people have these lofty ideals where they'd want to see themselves in 20 years, and they don't realize that they're not on the path to get there. And when you start writing out where you want to be in 10 years, in 5 years, in 3 years, that will very often affect where you're headed in 6 months. And people sometimes don't think about that. They realize they have to cover their bills in 6 months. They realize where they want to be in 6 months. But they don't view that in light of the question, where do I want to be in 20 years? People would spend their money differently if they think about 20 years and 10 years and 5 years. People think 20 years is very far down the road. It isn't. You want to own your own house? Well, maybe now's the time to start thinking about that. You want to be at a certain place financially. You want to be at a certain place as far as your family situation. You have to give it some thought. People very often go through life and never stop to think where they want to see themselves in 20 years. And that can be a game changer for a person. It's important every so often, before Rosh Hashanah, to stop and ask yourself, where do I want to be in 20 years? Have I made any headway towards that this past year? Now, just because I want to get somewhere in 20 years doesn't mean that I have to take the journey right now. It could be that right now I have to do things that are preparatory. We had a guy that came into here and said he wanted to be chief rabbi of Israel. But he wasn't Jewish. So his first step was to undergo Giyur. I could tell you he's on his way. He's learned quite a few Masechtas. He's a fine Talmud Chacham. But when he came in here, he wasn't Jewish. Okay, so he underwent Giyur. That was step one. And then he started learning how to read and how to read Chumash and Mishnah. You know what? Rabbi Akiva had a path to go on before he became Rabbi Akiva. So the fact that I want to be somewhere in 20 years doesn't mean that I don't have specific hurdles to cross now, but I have to stay focused. What are your values? Now, this is an important question. Very often people are unclear about what their values are. That's legitimate, but then you have to ask yourself if you should be dating. Now, your values are very key to dating because you don't know what challenges are going to befall you. You have no way of anticipating. Will fertility be an issue? Will money be an issue? Will our neighbors be an issue? Will our children's education be an issue? A person doesn't know if he's going to have special ed, if his children will need special treatment. You never know what issues are waiting for you in life. What you do need to know is what are your priorities? What are your values? Because when you date, that's what you can explore with the girl you're dating. We're going to expand on this in future classes about how you do this on a date. But in general, that's what you really want to find out. Do we have shared values? When you asked me about, someone here asked me about the girl that says, I'm willing to live in Mea Shearim, and the guy that says, I want a Ferrari. My question is, what are their values? Or what are their aspirations? Meaning, it's legitimate. He wants to have a Ferrari. I'm not contesting that. Dating is not about who should I be. It's about who am I right now. If I'm ready to date, then whoever I am, that's who's dating the girl. Now, I might have aspirations. If my aspirations are to own a Ferrari, then that has to come on the table when we're dating. If her aspirations are to live in Mea Shearim, that has to come on the table. If she simply means to say, I'm willing to live a simple life. I don't care if I live in a cramped apartment or a big apartment. That can work. And there are couples that, when they go on vacation, the woman says, why don't we go camping? I'll be happy to live in a tent out with all the mosquitoes and snakes and everything. And he says, you kidding? I've been working all year to go to a 5-star hotel. I want to go to a resort. And I want to have the temperature exactly the right temperature. I want to have my shower, my bath, my jacuzzi, my swimming pool. I'm not going on vacation to be bitten by mosquitoes. No way. Okay, it's a small thing. It's a small difference. They could cross that bridge. They'll manage because it's not key to who they are. But if his aspirations are to own a Lamborghini, a Ferrari, and his aspirations are to have this fancy house and a jacuzzi in each room, etc., and her aspirations are to have guests and live a simple life, and that's key to who she is, not a question of what she can live with, but what her aspirations are, then you understand the two can have a lot of chemistry, a lot of understanding, they can have a great platonic relationship, but they can't build a home together. Their values diverge. What are the last three books you read? And that's an indicator for you. The last three books show you that you've been on a certain path. You might say my aspirations are in a certain place, but have you started taking the journey down that path? The last three books show you something. Who are your role models? So that's also something that indicates to you where you headed. We had a student here who was in the gear department, and his role model was a person whose wife wasn't Shomer Shabbos. And he kept saying that's his role model. And I kept wondering, you know, if your role model is a guy who he barely keeps Shabbos and his wife doesn't keep Shabbos, where are you headed? So he was headed out of the gear program. He left. It didn't make sense for him to do gear. He wasn't headed for keeping Shabbos. He didn't want it. He was headed somewhere else. Who your role model is defines you for yourself. It's another angle of understanding. What am I looking towards? Where do I want to head? And why are we taking all these different angles to get to the same place? Because people tend to deceive themselves. There tends to be this confusion. People have a way of speaking about lofty ideals, but they're not really headed in that direction. Meaning people speak about all kinds of ideals, but are those really their values? Is that how they live their daily life? Is that how they choose their role model? And then they come on a date and they speak about lofty ideals, but it's nowhere to be seen in their daily living. So that's why I'm using all these different tools for each person to stop and be able to recognize for himself. Where am I holding now? If I have aspirations to be holding somewhere else, that's legitimate. I just have to discern between what I've accomplished thus far and what remains in the realm of my aspirations and my dreams. Is there a family that is a role model on your behalf? Now, that question was more to help you realize that there should be. I don't care who they are, but I care that you have them. You have to look around and see families where you can emulate the way they've built their home. The fact that a person comes from a different background and is trying to build a new direction in their life is admirable. But that doesn't mean it's easy. From the ideal to the practical is a long way. And if you have families that you emulate, then you've already found yourself a roadmap, and that's a big help. And the last question, what do you anticipate will be your greatest hardship in married life? Very often people know what their weakness is. One guy says, I know I'm a perfectionist. Another guy says, I know I have a temper. A third guy says, I know I have an issue with alcohol. Okay, so now that you've put it in writing, look back at what you've written and ask yourself, what have I done to deal with it? Very often we don't. We know we have an issue and somehow we assume we'll be able to manage with it. Sometimes we can and sometimes we cannot. I met with a guy once whose life story went the following, and I'm summarizing it in a nutshell. I'm taking out the part that's relevant. He went to high school for 2 years and they didn't understand him, so he switched high schools. After high school, he got a job, but his boss didn't understand him, so he left the job. He started taking a college course and he started getting a degree, but he felt like the professors didn't understand him, so he left college. Now he married a girl and she didn't understand him, so they got divorced. You guys see the common thread? He didn't see it. Meaning, it's very hard sometimes for a person to see it on his own. But you start seeing from high school a very consistent thread. Now he came to me and he asked me, he's contemplating leaving his job because his boss is not living up to his word. What do I think? So I stopped and said, wait, to myself. I said, wait, there's a certain pattern here. A pattern of inconsistency. A pattern where other people don't understand him, but he leaves.
Be careful, he's
going to
leave.
I got to think about it. That doesn't concern me. That's his concern, not mine. Very similar story. We scheduled a meeting in a certain yeshiva with a guy, and we schedule it for 4. The guy doesn't show up. So I have another meeting at 5. At 5:15, the guy shows up. So they asked me to reschedule to come in for the meeting. So I said, okay, it's at other people's expense, but if that's what you want me to do, that's what I'll do. We come into the meeting, and the guy says, they told me 5. So I didn't want to mention, it is 5:15. Even according to your standard, it's not the time you agreed on. But the secretary swears she told him 4. Okay, so you have a question mark. You tell yourself, I don't know, maybe yes, maybe no. And then in the meeting, he starts describing how the yeshiva didn't live up to what they promised in many different areas as far as setting them up. And you start seeing a pattern. Everyone doesn't live up to their end, but he's okay. Really? Everyone? I don't know. Doesn't sound right. We have patterns. Every one of us has patterns where our weaknesses reappear. And we have to ask ourselves, what's going to be my hardship? If I look back at my previous relationships, if I look back at my course of life, where do I see a recurring theme? Let's try to find it by ourselves and say, okay, how do I deal with that? I'll give you a classical example. You come to shul, there are those people who always walk in 5, 10, 15 minutes late. Classically, it's the same people. They're always coming in late. I never noticed this. But when I became rabbi of Shul Kochav Yaakov, so I noticed that people were coming late to Mincha Friday afternoon. So I said to the Gaboim, it's really hard. We daven Mincha 35 minutes before Shkia. It's really hard on the wives that the husband has to leave so early. Maybe we should push Mincha a little bit later so that people will have an easier time coming here on time. The Gaboim said, well, do whatever you want. But we were here when Mincha was later, before they made Mincha this time. Same people came late. Meaning it used to be that Mincha was 20 minutes before Shkia. Same people came at the end of Chazaras HaShatz, caught their late Mincha, same thing. So it's not you're not going to win anything by doing it. Okay? Then I started realizing that that's the way it is in Shacharis too. Same people come late, same people leave early, and if you'll ever stop them and have a conversation with them, they have all the reasons in the world. Every time it's a different emergency, they must. Right? But it's not. It's a way of life. So we have to stop and look at ourselves and say, okay, what about me? What have my relationships looked like? What have my explosions looked like? I had a friend who, I think I told you guys the story, he was orphaned without a mother, without a father, without a family, without a home. And we got him job number one. I told you guys the story?
Perhaps.
No. Okay, so we got him a job, we got him a car, we got him a house to live in, and he sticks to the job. After about a year and a half, he walks in and tells his boss off, tells him what he thinks of him and how unfair he's been to him, how he hasn't treated him well, and obviously he's out of job. Okay, you ask yourself, what was so bad? I tried to find out. I didn't think he was in the right, but you try to have pity on a guy. He's, at the end of the day, he is left without any family. Okay, we worked really hard, called many different contacts. Finally, we get him a second job. Second job, half a year later, same story. You guys don't appreciate all the work I'm doing for you. You're not paying me half what I'm worth. It's not fair. You guys haven't been fair to me all along. You haven't lived up to your end of the deal. Boom, lost the second job. I'm not helping him find the third job. Good luck. You know, if he's in the right, if he could destroy the job he's sitting in because he believes he's in the right, okay, then he better also figure out how to find the third job. That's his business. But does he see it? We have to stop and try to look back at ourselves, look at recurring themes in our lives, and understand, okay, maybe this is my weakness. And very often, if we can pinpoint that, then we can also grow. And that's very hard. Most people don't grow. Most people stay in their same rut, in the same circle, repeating the same thing, and bearing the brunt of it over and over and over again in their lives. If a person can stop and look back and see how many people he's gotten into fights with, and I could tell you another terrible story, a guy who broke off with his kids and broke off with his wife and broke off with his friends because everyone reached a point where they were unfaithful. So the guy will quote to you Shlomo HaMelech's line, Chad me'elef lo matzati, I haven't found a single man among 1,000. Look, Shlomo HaMelech said it. So he says it too. Everyone's wrong. But you got to stop and ask yourself, wait a second, your wife, your kids, your friends, so everyone's wrong. So that's an extreme story. He doesn't see it. I'm one of those friends. We're on speaking terms, just barely. But okay, you know, I don't even know what he holds against me. But okay, I don't know. But I know I'm wrong, right? Okay. But we all have those recurring things in our life. And if we want to grow, and especially in preparation for marriage, sometimes if we can pinpoint them, then we can resolve them, then we can enter marriage in a much better place. Not every person has big issues. And if you'll notice the printout that I have, mind passing that to me, Yaakov? Printout begins with the flip side of everything I've said here, which I think is very important. Where is it? Here. Yes, where does the letter begin with? Dating can be a trying time. It is important not to lose perspective. You are great and have accomplished a tremendous amount. In spite of what you still want to work on, what you have already accomplished by coming to the Machon is a revolution. So please read and think about the following. And then the letter goes to stress about all you've accomplished. Because part of what can happen with such a letter, part of what can happen with such a questionnaire is that a person starts beating up on himself. Wait a second. Look at what I haven't done. And that's not the point of this. The point is, see what's good, be realistic about where you are, and go into dating from that if you're ready for it. If there's something, and that's the final point, if there is a recurring theme in one's life that's going to present a hardship in marriage, so then maybe a person should work on it. But, you know, people have undergone abuse. Be it, there are different kinds of abuse, as you all know. And they don't get help. They don't get treatment. And then they go into marriage, and they're really going to have a hard time building a marriage very often because emotionally they need to repair something. It's not right to yourselves. If a person has something they have to work out, we had a student here who was a serious alcoholic. And he went to AA, And he has a beautiful family. I circumcised I don't know how many of his kids. We had another student here who was a drug dealer, not only a drug addict. But he worked on it. And I circumcised I don't know how many of his kids. I don't remember anymore. He built a life. He went and said, I could deal with this. I will deal with this. We had a student here who was a thief. He told me he doesn't think there's anyone in his life he hasn't stolen from other than his mother. And I had to wonder. I had him over in my house too, right? Okay. But you know what? He worked on it. He built. And again, he has a beautiful family. I don't remember how many kids already. Machon Meir is about moving forward. If a person sees they still have a big issue to deal with, then deal. It's doable. And don't lose perspective. What you've accomplished so much is great. And what you have thus far is tremendous. And I did not stress the weaknesses. I think you have to think about what your strengths are, at least as much, and probably more than your weaknesses. And working with that, Bezrat Hashem, you move forward.